Hey guys, this is Josh Nicodemus, also known as Josh of All Trades, and we're listening to the Builder Sessions.
Welcome to the Builder Sessions, a podcast where we chat with your favorite builders.
We get to know them, their stories, and hopefully inspire you to get off the couch and build something cool. I'm Hoff.
And I'm Rosie. And on this episode, we have Josh Nicodemus, aka Josh of All Trades. We talk all about his experience as a professional house remodeler, the importance of being intentional about company culture in the trades, and how on-the-job experience is very beneficial in building up one's skill sets.
Please enjoy our interview with Josh.
Josh, welcome to the Builder Sessions.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
This is great. We're excited. For our listeners who don't know who you are, would you mind sharing a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been in the construction industry since I was 17. And, you know, I've always been always hated it sitting at a desk. I hated school. So it was kind of natural progression for me to sort of want to do stuff with my hands. And so at 17, right out of high school, I started working for a local remodeling company, sort of friend of the family, and hated it at first because, you know, when you're the low man on the totem pole, everything sucks, right? You're the ditch digger and the crawl space crawler and the attic guy, you're all that. So, you know, it was rough for the first year or two, but, you know, in general, I love the guys I work with. I love the work. You know, I started learning a lot, and that's when you start to get really interested, when you start learning more. And so did that for 7 years, and then decided, you know, like, you know what, I think I can do this on my own. So started a remodeling business of my own with a business partner, and did that for another 7 years. And as much as I love the work, I didn't love the customers. So decided, you know, like, you know what, if I could do this same work, but for myself, for people that, you know, for houses that I own, that would be pretty sweet. So I started studying real estate. And so starting in 2016, I started, you know, flipping houses basically. And now we full-time, you know, we've got three crews and we flip houses full-time. And we started about a year and a half, 2 years ago, started doing some spec homes as well. So did a little bit of new construction, and we buy some rental properties. So now I'm a real estate investor technically, but I'm still very hands-on, and, you know, I love the hands-on part of it. So that's kind of, I still get out there and swing a hammer every day with my crews. And, so yeah, licensed contractor, real estate investor, it would kind of narrow it down.
So you do a little bit of everything then in your renos. Do you do like finishing, like right from gut to whatever you're like, do the finish, installing cabinets, tile, all that stuff too?
We do. Yeah. So, you know, my handle on Instagram is Josh of All Trades, and that's because we do literally everything. We could build a house from ground up, and if we had to, we could do it all in-house, not sub anything out. Now, of course, just for, you know, efficiency, we do sub some things out. You know, the bigger the job is, we might sub out drywall, we sub out roofing, you know, stuff like that. But we still do quite a bit of it. We do our own, you know, demolition. We do the framing, the plumbing, the electrical. We do, you know, we can do drywall. We do paint, tile, framework, cabinetry. I mean, you name it. You know, we pour concrete, a little bit of everything. It keeps us busy for sure.
That's awesome.
How many guys do you have on your crew?
Nine.
Total.
Yeah. So it's me plus nine other guys split into three different crews. And so each crew is between two and three guys.
So going back a little bit, can you talk about any like formal training that you had, or were you just all experience on the ground?
Yeah. Let's go. None. Yeah. Just all That's on the cool. job. You know, I get that question a lot. People are like, hey man, should I go to a trade school? And, you know, honestly, I don't think trade schools, I think that's great. If you want to go to one, I just can't speak to it. I've never did that. And I think on the job experience is as good or better than anything else you could ever pick up, you know, learning from your own mistakes, learning from other people, you know, who have been in the trades for a long time. So,
when you hire someone, how does that work? Do you encourage them to go to get some training, or you're like, hey, welcome home. We got you. We'll teach you everything you need to know.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I get asked this question a lot. They're like, how do you find experienced people? And the truth is, we do it probably a little different than most. We don't look for any experienced people. And there's a reason for that. Part of that is because in the past, I've hired guys that were like, hey, I'm experienced. I've been doing this 10 years. Like, I could run jobs for you. And then when they come on, I realize that's not the case. They haven't been trained properly. And then I have to reteach them. And it's really hard to teach somebody who thinks they already know everything, right?
They have bad habits.
They do. They got bad habits, and it's difficult to, kind of unteach that stuff once they've learned it and been doing it that way a long time, unless they're very humble, which, contractors aren't often
Few
that
and far
humble.
between.
So, yeah. So, honestly, we look for guys that have, a great attitude and a great work ethic. And outside of that, we want to teach them everything from the ground up, which it takes a long time, right? It's an investment. So, we're looking for guys that want to stick around a long time and are willing to learn and work hard. And we look for, company culture to me is more important than their experience. And so if they fit our company culture and they can take a joke and they're fun to hang out with, that's more important to me than how much, whether they've been to trade school or have a bunch of experience. Because like I said, we want to train them our way of doing things. So does that answer that
Oh,
question?
absolutely. Yeah. Talking about company culture for a minute, do you is that it sounds like that's a really important thing for you. And so like I know I've worked in a number of places, and company culture is the last thing some of these people even think about. But then they wonder why people aren't happy, and like why these people get along, whatever. Can you talk a little bit about what your philosophy is on company culture and what you try to communicate and the culture that you're trying to cultivate?
Yeah, absolutely. So, company culture for us is at the top of the list. Like you mentioned, a lot of people, it's at the bottom of the list. It's kind of an afterthought. For us, we're very intentional about it. We do a number of things each year to, sort of make our guys feel at home and to kind of cultivate that culture in a business, which is you have to be intentional about it. So, like for instance, in the fall, we take our guys on a 3-day trip and we stay in a lake house. And
Oh,
we talk about
nice.
our goals for the next year. And we talk about not just our business goals, but our individual goals. Like, I want to hear from all my guys what their individual goals are for their families, for for how much money they want to make, for, their fitness goals, reading, all those things that we want our guys to be doing. And they all kind of feed off of each other. Like, well, shoot, he's doing that. I want to step up my game in that area. He's dating his wife, well, I want to step up my game and take my wife out more often, right? Things like that. So we do an offsite trip every year for that. We usually tend to do something else a couple times a year. Like we'll take the crew, take a day off work, go golfing, and we all suck at it. We just whack balls and drink beers and drive the carts and whatever, have fun. But yeah, we do things offsite. We do a Christmas party, which is always a blast. We probably once every other month or so we'll kind of knock off work early on a Friday and go, get some eat at a bar or a restaurant or something, just kind of hang out and talk. And like we have like a company group chat in our text chat, which guys are always just shooting off memes and
Yeah.
jokes and cracking on each other. And just it's simple things, right? It's not anything that really costs a crazy amount of money, but it's being intentional about that and making sure these guys, feel like they're all friends, and they are. So it's a that's those are kind of the quick and dirty, ways we do it. But
I feel like that is light years ahead of, you think of company culture, like, it's always at the bottom.
anywhere else.
Everybody wants to go for, we want to experience people. And I think the company culture, there is none when you're going for experience. Because, like you said, you get somebody who has been doing something for 10 or 15 years, and to try and teach them, they're just there to do their job. And so putting that time into the company culture piece, I mean, listening, going to a lake house and talking about not even only professional goals, but personal goals, creating that almost community of your company is, I
Yeah.
feel like not many people are doing
Where do we
that.
send our resumes
Yeah.
to? Just a side note.
Like
You got my email. Yeah, you know how to get
it's,
it.
I
But
think.
yeah, no, it's important. It's important to us. And it may be in every business that's not possible. I'm not sure.
I don't
And we've
believe
talked
that.
about
It's
that.
possible. It's possible.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't know. I'd like to think so. We've sort of intentionally limited our growth You know, we could probably blow this thing up way bigger than it is, but we've sort of intentionally limited that to, you know, making sure that we're not getting so big that we can't hear the little guys in the crew and, you know, all be buddies, you know what I mean? So that's sort of, we've sort of set a cap of how many guys we want, you know, so that we can really keep it as a tight knit group. So
now, do you have any, do you have any training or anything with like the company related stuff, management, business management or anything? Or are you just all hands on deck and just, cause I feel like we, Rosie and I both went to, both have a bachelor of management and they just scream company culture and all this other things. And it's hard to enforce in, I think maybe the corporate world, and maybe even harder in the trades, but I feel like you're just like check, 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 which is amazing. Did you just come up with this and you know, you're, yeah. Can you explain that?
Yeah, that's a good question. No, I don't have any formal training about it or anything like that. Some of it, you know, in my last business where I, you know, that first remodeling business I started, I hired on guys, like my business partner was a friend of mine that worked in the previous company. So we were buddies. I hired on, you know, my younger brother and my brother-in-law and a couple other guys that were like, you know, I didn't know them from Adam, but eventually, you know, they seemed like nice guys. They seemed cool. So there was sort of a culture that sort of built itself. And of course we were intentional about it, like I've talked about, but it sort of built itself. And then once we had that sort of established, we didn't want to lose it. So since then, you know, it sort of happened almost by accident. But once it was established, we didn't want to lose it. So we were very intentional about keeping up with all those activities that sort of, you know, cultivate that culture. So, yeah, but no formal training, you know, nothing like that.
Wow. I feel like the productivity, having a culture that you're explaining, I'm sure your crews are very productive when everybody feels supported and, you know, it's almost like a family in a way, and you're spending probably more time with your crews and with your guys than potentially you are with your own family. So having that, you know, nice tight knit bond and, you know, confidence in being able to help each other and, you know, pick each other up. And that's got to be an awesome environment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a blast. I mean, it makes a difference, right? You know, guys that, you know, Sunday night comes around and they're just dreading going to work on Monday. And, you know, I'd like to think my guys don't feel that way. You know, they're looking forward to going to work and hanging out, you know, not hanging out. I mean, we're getting work done. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, it's a pleasant environment. So it's not like these guys don't dread going to work, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's like Hoff was saying, like you spend more time with the people you work with than you do your family in most cases. And you might as well enjoy it. Like,
and have fun.
No one said to have a successful business or to have a job that you can't, like a successful career, that you can't enjoy it. Like there's something, even in like the trades, it seems like you are like going against the grain here with the culture. And like, cause trades, there's a ton of cliches about the trades. It's hard. You got to work hard and you can't have fun. Blah, 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 blah. It's like, well, no, yeah, you can. You can have a good quality of life and you can enjoy yourself. It's really cool. Yep. It's really cool.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah. You're right though. There is some sort of cliches about the trades and how, you know, you need to be a hard ass and you can't, you know, you got to be hard on the new guy and, you know, be mean to each other. And that's just not the case. I mean, don't get me wrong. We, you know, we crack on the new guy, but it's in good fun. And we, you know, you can do it the right way and still have fun and be nice to each other.
I'm curious I'd love to be a fly on the wall in that first like lake house gathering where you have all these like gruff trades guys around. I just have this image. Be like, so let's talk about our feelings or like, or you're, you know, or not necessarily that, but talk about like, you know, just being vulnerable in that way, like share about what your family goals are and that kind of stuff. That was probably an interesting one, but it's probably the fruit that has come from that has probably been incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, we sort of set those goals at the end of the year for the following year. And then we do a quarterly accountability meeting, cool. So we'll kind of check in on each other and like, hey, I got what you told me you wanted to do, you know, 3 months ago. How you been doing? You've been doing that, what you committed to doing. And so there's accountability, you know, as well as sort of just can't just spit out goals and they come to fruition. So we do that too, but
That accountability piece is huge, because lots of times, you know, you make these goals and 12 months down the road or whenever, you know, did you do them? But having those check-ins, and we're doing something at work a little bit differently with that too, with different goals and meeting more frequently. So it's not just something, you know, you throw on the back burner and, you know, constantly talking about it, you know, one-on-one or as a group too, because that accountability piece can be huge when you set goals and have, you know, a long amount of time in between check-ins. Are you really thinking about that? Or are you just, you know, grinding and working out? So good on you for, because again, it seems like all this is, in theory, is the right way. This is how, if I was to run a company, I'd probably do that. But it's harder to put it into action, especially with, you know, bigger crew and in the trades and stuff. Because again, there's kind of a stigma around, you know, you talk about feelings or you want to just check in with people, right? It's just, okay, let's get to work, grind it out, go home, come back the next day. So you're doing something amazing here. And
yeah, that's cool.
It's kind of inspiring. I'm like, oh, this can be done differently.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that, man. Yeah, I don't know if it's right or wrong, but it's worked out well for us. So
that's awesome. Yeah. So what was it like the first time you took that step and just started your own thing? What was that the night before terrifying. You did that? Did you get any sleep? Like, what was that process like?
Yeah, terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. You know, because I was, you know, I was married and I had, you know, three kids at that point. And so, yeah, that's nerve wracking. Right. But, you know, I figured, you know, what's the worst that could happen? And a lot of people, you know, they're nervous to start their own thing. They're nervous to take a risk. And, you know, what I kept telling myself is like, what is the absolute worst that can happen? Will I die? No, you know, maybe I'll go broke. Okay. What's the worst that would happen if that happened? I would have to move in with my in-laws or something, you know? Yeah, that would suck. That would be embarrassing, but I would survive. So, you know, and I put faith in my own work ethic. I knew that, you know, I knew that I wouldn't be lazy. I would outwork just about anybody. So, you know, if you have faith in your own worth ethic, and then you realize like the worst thing that could happen really isn't that bad in the grand scheme of things. But yeah, it was super nerve wracking. I was terrified, you know, and the one thing that we did was, you know, on the side, we went and sold as many jobs as we could. So we knew it'd be busy for a couple months, you know, and that was like friends and family and stuff, you know, people, we were doing side work anyway, you know, nights and weekends and whatever people, if you're in the trades, you know, people are always asking you to do stuff on the side.
Yeah.
And so we just lined it up and said, hey, you know, kind of don't tell anybody, but we're going to start our own business. So can we do this at this date? You know, we'll schedule it for this. And so we had lined up some jobs and we didn't know what we were going to do after that, but you know, we, it worked out, you know, the word got out and man, we never missed a paycheck. We never missed a meal. It, you know, it worked out. So, but yeah, nerve-wracking, definitely nerve-wracking.
So how many projects do you complete a year? Like, is it like these full guts or these full renos? I shouldn't say guts, these full renovations. I'm sure depending on the project, some of them are a bit more time consuming. So on like how many projects do you work on at a time kind of thing?
Yeah. So anywhere between like 6 to 10 at a time. And we average like 20-ish a year. And that would include our, you know, our flips, renovations, and rentals, which we renovate, and then some new construction as well. We usually do 2 or 3 of those, you know, stacked in there on top. So around 20 a year, and there's each crew, like I said, we got 3 crews, and then I manage the new construction. So each crew typically has between 1 and 2 projects going at a time. And then, you know, we might have a couple new builds going or a rental being renovated on the side. So, yeah, that's enough to keep us busy for sure. And almost everything we do is, you know, full gut or near full gut for renovations. I mean, we don't do a whole lot of, we've gotten a couple things that were cosmetic, but almost everything seems to be able to get a good deal on something, it needs to be really bad shape. And so we get stuff that's bad shape, you know?
Yeah. Wow. So that seems so, I've did a little bit of contracting when I was going to school with some hotels and, you know, doing flooring and plumbing and being able to kind of get your hands into everything. It can be a bit tricky because there's probably state to state's different with codes and different things, but being able to constantly do something different each day is kind of rewarding. You know, you could go build cabinets or just frame all day, and some people enjoy that. And but having the constant change of work environment and type of job must be rewarding for yourself and for your crew to, you know, constantly be doing something new and not just going back to that boring old ripping up, or I'm laying flooring for the next 8 weeks.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. We talk about that a lot, you know, our guys, you know, and, you know, it would be easy to just, well, I don't want to downplay it. I won't say it'd be easy, but it would be simpler to just run a flooring business, right? You're doing the same type of work every day and you would master that. But to me, you know, it would get a little boring, I think. You know, of course you have different projects, different products, you know, so it would keep it somewhat interesting, different customers, they always keep things interesting. But yeah, doing different types of work all the time and, you know, constantly learning, constantly improving different, whether it's a different location or a different type of work, whether it's plumbing, electrical, you know, drywall, demolition, we get into all of it. So it does keep things interesting for sure. You know,
do you take on large projects, or are these more smaller homes to flip? Like, are you doing, like, are you, I don't know, like mansions, or, you know, are you doing large scale projects?
Office spaces, or
we try not to. We've done a few that would be, you know, in the mansion range, but most everything we do is in the average home size, 1500 to 3000 square feet. We try, and the reason is we try to stick to stuff, you know, because we're investing in these properties, we own them, and we need them to sell. So we sort of try to stick to stuff that the average purchaser, the average homeowner can buy. And in this area, we're heavily populated by military presence. And so we try to stick with stuff we know that they can afford. And, mm-hmm. you know, if you get stuff that's, you know, $1.5 million, that lowers your buyer pool a lot.
Yeah.
You know, we're doing stuff on average, you know, 350 to 500, a little above, a little below here and there, but yeah. Mostly in that kind of range for us.
That's interesting. When you talk about your customer, and it sounds like you're being very intentional about that too, like considering who's around you. And I mean, you could look at that, like, obviously you have to make a living and you need to sell, but just considering your corporate culture, company culture that you're trying to achieve here, how much of that kind of spills over to how you treat customers and how you view them and how you try to, you know, because there's some companies could look at a customer, a potential customer, as just a dollar sign, right? I don't think that's probably the way you do things. So can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we're trying to build our name for ourselves in the community as being, you know, a quality builder, a quality remodeler. And part of that is, like, you know, I can't say for sure whether or not we'll always be flipping houses, right? If the real estate market were ever to tank and we couldn't do it, I would want to have a good name for myself and be able to go back into remodeling for customers again, right? And part of that is, like, just treating people right. So we don't deal a lot with the people who buy our homes because the agents really go back and forth and we don't really talk to them face to face very often. But we've had a couple things where, you know, after we sold the house, something came up, like an electrical issue or something, you know, or they had like a drywall patch that, you know, didn't hold something, you know, whatever happens, stuff happens. And, you know, we kind of take pride in going back and taking care of those things. As long as it's within reason, you know, if it's stuff that, you know, we legitimately worked on, you know, so going back and kind of making things right for people, even though we don't, you know, imply any kind of warranty, it's the right thing to do to just take care of people. If it's a part of our work that failed, you know, we make sure that we warranty that and go back and fix stuff for people. And that is always something, because they know that we didn't give them warranty and they know we don't need to come back, but they always seem to be very appreciative of that when we do that. And then on the sale process, you know, when you sell a house, sometimes you'll get a request and they'll say, hey, could you do this? You know, we want to make them an offer, but could you do this for us? And we almost always, you know, if it's a reasonable request, we almost always do it, whether it's hanging blinds in the windows or, you know, doing something for them, you know, to make their life easier, because buying a house is stressful, right?
Yeah, everybody, no kidding.
If you ever bought a house, you know, it's it's all kinds of stressful. So, yeah, so we do our best to treat them right. We don't get a whole lot of face-to-face interaction with them, though, so it's somewhat limited.
I feel like those little jobs, I guess, or tasks that you're doing, those little things can go a long way for people. You know, they, when you're spending a lot of money or your first home or multiple homes, and these little things, you know, hanging blinds, whatever, fixing a little drywall patch, that, to me, that stuff goes a long way. And that word of mouth, you know, you don't need to uphold this or do these jobs, but, and you're being asked to, or you're not even being asked to, and you go and do them. That word of mouth of, you know, next time something happens, are they going to go try and find somebody that they don't know, or are they going to contact you and your crews to be like, hey, I've got some, you know, some things coming up, or I've got another home that I would like to be remodeled and you treated me really well and you didn't have to. So I feel like those little things that you're going out of your way for, are very beneficial to upholding kind of your image for your company. And, you know, sometimes those small things go, even though people want to get into the big jobs, doing a bunch of those smaller things and looking after people, I think can go a very long way.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I think so too. You know, and we get, you know, occasionally we'll get somebody that says, you know, and they'll reach out to me like on Facebook or Instagram or something like, hey, we bought one of your houses. We love it so much. My brother-in-law is looking to buy a house in this area. Do you have anything coming up, you know, and that kind of thing. And so we get a lot of those messages and people saying, hey, you know, we love what you guys did, or agents even, you know, getting a reputation with agents where they're like, hey, we love your work. Do you have any other properties coming up in this area? And so, yeah, you know, slowly building that reputation.
How does it make you feel when people reach out that you don't know and say, hey, or, you know, like, that's got to be a feel good moment when people are reaching out, agents, existing home buyers, or relatives from people you've worked with. That's going to make you feel good. Hey.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course. I mean, everybody likes their work to be appreciated. So yeah, I'd much rather them reach out for that reason than to say, hey, you know, this guy did a crappy job, you know, and you know, there's all kinds of things that could happen. Right. And house flippers have a terrible name. You know, everybody knows somebody that bought a house that was flipped and it was terrible. And there's a reason house flippers are sort of cliched as these, like, you know, crappy, you know, they just do the cheapest, whatever. And we're working really hard to not have that reputation. So
it's changing the way that people look at that industry, I guess. Hey.
Yeah. At least in our area. Right. Yeah. Trying to.
Do you find that there's a lot of, like, as far as competition, because you said, like, there's house flippers, but then there's professional house flipping companies. Like, is there, in that realm, are there a lot of other companies or groups that are doing similar to what you're doing, or are you kind of alone right now in that?
In our area?
Or yeah, in your like area, in your area, yeah.
Not a lot, you know, I'm from Maryland originally, and there was a lot of competition up there. I mean, huge companies, lots of people doing it. When I moved down here, much less so. There are a couple others in this area that are doing kind of what we're doing, but we are probably doing more than most, you know. Most of the house flippers in this area are sort of smaller operations, even though we're pretty small. They're even smaller, you know. It's a one-man show that sort of hires everything out to another contractor. And so, yeah, there's some competition. And I, you know, I don't believe really in competition. I believe in collaboration, right? Yeah. So most of these guys that are doing this work, you know, we're friends, you know, and we talk. And, you know, they send me stuff. They're like, hey, I couldn't buy this one, but you might want it. And I might tell them, like, hey, you know, this one doesn't hit my numbers, but, you know, you might be able to get it done for cheaper, whatever, you know. And I'm friends with most of my, you know, competition.
Yeah, that's cool. So, and that's, and yeah. Again, that's another thing, like changing the culture, right? Collaboration versus competition. I think you're going to get a lot more positive results from that than being like a cutthroat competitor, right?
That's it, man. I don't believe in cutthroat. I mean, the whole like nice guys finish last thing is just not true, yeah. In my opinion. I mean, certainly there are people that get ahead like that, but it always comes back to bite them. So
100%. You definitely reap what you sow, hey?
Yeah. So how has it been in the last few years, and even now, I guess, with trying to get materials for projects? Has that, you know, through the pandemic must have been really tough with, or, and even now there's a lot of wait times for up here windows and doors and even like garage doors, there's big wait times. Are you still, are you kind of over that hump now? Do you stockpile and stuff, or do you kind of order per project? Can you kind of explain a little bit of that?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's been a headache, man. Getting materials has been difficult. I don't think that's any secret. Most people have experienced that if you're in the trades or any kind of industry like that. One thing that we've started doing, it's gotten a little better, you know, but like you said, windows and garage doors, for whatever reason, are just super long lead times. Part of what we've had to do is, you know, we've moved for two reasons. We've moved to ordering, like bulk ordering our stuff for every time we buy a house, like the day we close on it, we go and we get a list of everything, or sometimes we'll get our list ahead of time. And we'll bulk order everything we need for that job, even if it is not, you know, that job might sit for 3 weeks before that crew is ready to start it. But we'll bulk order everything we need and it's on its way, you know, and at least we get the ball rolling. Occasionally, we'll even order long lead items like windows before we even close on it, you know, before we even buy it, which is a little risky, you know, because something could, if for any reason that falls through, you end up with these custom windows that don't fit any other house. But yeah, so we just order everything ahead of time as far in advance as we can. And, we do bulk purchase some things like, you know, faucets and shower diverters and things like that. We know we're going to use on every job. We order those by the dozen or whatever and try to get them and store them until we're ready for them. It's hard to do that with things, you know, really big items. Like, you know, if you had to store five houses worth of kitchen cabinets, that would be difficult, right? You'd have to have a pretty good sized warehouse to constantly stock everything. But we're just trying to stay ahead of it as much as we can, and some of it you just end up waiting, you know.
Yeah. Now, does that take a fair bit, like in the grand scheme of a scope of a project, almost like the project management side of, you know, figuring out what you need, does that take a fair bit of time? Do you do that, or do you have somebody on your crew with the ordering and figuring out, you know, how many windows, sizes, because if you're doing these full guts, you're doing, you know, flooring, drywall, cabinets, light fixtures. There's a lot of ordering. How does that take a lot of time in the grand scheme of the project?
Yeah, it does. You know, so my business, the way we do it is, you know, whether we've just purchased the property or getting ready to, my partner and I, so I have a business partner. He's my brother-in-law. My wife's little brother. And so I kind of trained him up from nothing. He's one of those guys that started with my remodeling company when he was like 17. And so I trained him and now he's my partner. And so he and I will, as soon as we buy the property or right before, we'll go and we'll walk through a property. We'll figure out the layout we want to do. And we get a huge list together on a pad of paper, everything we need. And we go into Lowe's and we basically bulk order everything then. And it takes every bit of a full day to do that between getting the list and then sitting there at Lowe's with our associate and putting through a big order. And we do that for two reasons. One is obviously getting those long lead items on order, but then also we get a pretty hefty discount by bulk ordering. There's programs with Lowe's that I think a lot of people don't know about, but we usually get around 35% off the entire order.
Wow.
By doing that. It's a fair amount of time though. It eats up a day for us to be able to, you know, make our list and order it. So
I love that.
Is that answer?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's yeah.
So grand scheme of things, big picture, when you're coming up or, you know, even now, are there any people who did or currently inspire you or that you go to for support or, you know, like, did you grow up watching like This Old House or New Yankee Workshop or whatever they, you know, or what's Bob Vila, you know, like, were there any people who inspired you? Like, I want to do that. Or maybe it was a shop teacher or, you know, a relative. Like, can you talk about those people who really influenced you that you kind of accredit, you know, somewhat or like some things to, why you are where you are right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, my very first boss when I started working construction, I mean, just a ton of respect for that guy. You know, he was part of the reason, you know, I really respected him was because he, just for lack of better terms, he was super successful, you know, multi-millionaire, owned a small remodeling company, but did really, really well for himself. But he would still show up on the job site and pick up a broom or a shovel or whatever was needed and put his hands on it. And the guys really respected him for that. And I respected him for that. And so I try to do the same, you know, as far as remodeling goes, you know, his efficiency and just doing it for whatever, 50 years or whatever, you know, you become good at it. And so I looked up a lot to him, learned a lot from him. And, you know, now there's a guy, his name is Matthew Gregory. He's in Alabama, like Birmingham, and he's running a really big operation, probably flipping. I mean, I say really big, like 100 houses a year and super successful. And like, and that's not why, like, I respect him because he's built a great operation, but he is just like one of the nicest guys, most down to earth, nicest guys that you'll ever meet. The way he talks to his crews, the way he talks to his people, his subcontractors, just super, super kind. So I try to emulate him in a lot of ways just because, like, just like you said, before, there's sort of this cliche of like construction people have to be this gruff, yeah, you know, no nonsense, but he's not that way. And he's super successful and he's just really, really nice guy. And so I look up a lot to him and try to emulate him in some ways. Cause he's just a great dude.
That's awesome. And growing up, did anyone inspire you when you're coming out, even when you were a kid, was there some sort of, I want to be like that guy or, you know?
You know, no, not really. You know, of course, I a lot of respect for my father and how he dealt with people, but he wasn't in the trades. And so there's nobody, you know, as far as like work goes, you know, I learned a lot from my dad and work ethic. He certainly instilled into me. But there was never anybody growing up where it was like, hey, you know, because I didn't even know what I wanted to do. When I started working construction, I didn't think it was going to be a, you know, forever job for me. I thought like, oh, it'll keep me busy this summer. And then got my hands on it and loved it. So, but yeah, no, you know, not necessarily.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Do you guys get into property management at all and any rentals and that type of thing? Like providing a nice, clean, like quality home for people who might not otherwise be able to afford it, or just in general, like a quality thing so people can kind of trust you based on your brand that way when they're trying to rent?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a number of rental properties. And so, and kind of back to like family business, my other brother manages our rental properties. So he's our property manager. And so it's a family business, man. I got two brothers, so cool. Two or three brother-in-laws in the business. And then my wife's sister, so my other sister-in-law manages our Airbnb stuff. And so,
oh, cool.
But yeah, so we've got some rental properties and we take pride in trying to make it a clean, healthy space for people to move into. We renovate them to make them nice. We're not slumlording. You know what I mean?
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, we do that as well for sure.
Down the road, would you consider getting into real estate? You know, would you be the whole operation of renovating or buying, renovating and selling, or is that another skill?
Yeah, that's what we do. Yeah,
do you sell the properties after you reno them?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yep, exactly.
So, oh, I thought that you had I wasn't sure if like, so do you have your real estate license? Is that kind of
I don't. So we work with agents. So that's another thing. My business partner's wife is an agent. Oh, so
that's incredible. That's amazing.
It's a lot of family we've wrapped into this business. So,
oh, that's so cool.
But yeah, so we've got agents that send us properties. We buy them, we fix them up, and then we let them list them on the back end. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, that's our main business.
So it's like a full encompassing company from pretty much gut to remodel to sell.
You got it. That's it, man.
Wow.
That's what we do.
See, I knew that it was, you know, from gut to remodel. But I wasn't sure that the agency and listing and stuff was part of the company too. That's incredible.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And you know, and not that all the agents don't work for us directly or anything, but yeah. Just relationship business. Yeah.
How has the market been in the last 5 years down in Florida there with property prices? Has it climbed up in your Canada? Our housing prices have climbed pretty steep.
It's insane.
Over the last, well, since pandemic, pretty much. Is that kind of similar for you?
It has, yeah. The prices have skyrocketed, you know. Some of the properties, you know, like my last primary residence, for instance, went up like probably 35 or 40% in value in the 2 years that I was there.
Wow.
And you know, it's skyrocketed, and we're starting to see, you know, it's hard to tell now, but we're starting to see a little bit of a plateau. But stuff's still selling pretty high and pretty quick here. So it's not, you know, a lot of people talking about like, oh, the real estate market's, you know, crashing and whatever, but we haven't seen that happen yet. It's still pretty hot here.
Yeah, that just it's crazy to see how something like with COVID and everything, how quickly pricing on homes can go up. I mean, even
Oh.
in here, there's some houses that, you know, a starter home here pre-pandemic was, I would say, 250 to 325. Some of those have jumped up to five. So, you know, you get into this starter home for almost half. And when my wife and I were looking at homes, it was kind of, here's we're in a starter home at what, 350 or something, and maybe make the next jump up to 500. Well, now you step up to, you might have to go into 700 to get into a little bit. I'm not spending $700,000 on a starter or a upgraded starter home. It's
Oh,
just, it's
yeah.
crazy. And for people getting started, it's got to be frustrating. And then now interest rates and, you know, it's unfortunate, but I don't know how we get around this, or I guess it just takes some time for everything to kind of level out. And in your industry, I mean, that's got to be hard for, okay, we're purchasing this property for X amount of dollars, putting so much money into materials, and that skyrocketed. I mean, that's got to be a hard hand to play in
Yeah,
for playing
how do
poker
you
here.
do it? How do you do it?
Yeah, no, it
Wow.
is. It's difficult to wrap your head around that, you know, because I'm still running numbers on 2000, you know, 19 numbers, and I'm like, okay, we can renovate that house for 70 grand, and we haven't done a house for less than 100 grand in months, and you know, it's just the price of material is just incredibly high, and then you know, and then the I'm like, oh, we could have bought that house last year for, you know, 200 grand, but now it's 300, and it's not in better shape, you know. It's so yeah, it's hard to wrap your head around that, but then it seems that the sale price is going up, you know, sort of help make all that, you know, make all
Yeah.
that worth doing. Yeah, it's crazy. The prices of the inflation or whatever you want to call it is wild,
I
you
remember
know.
buying 2x4s for the shop. It was, I think, what at the time, $3.15 for a 2x4 8 foot. And in the middle of the pandemic, they were up to 11.50 a
Yeah.
board. So I'm thinking, you know, these home builders that, well, no wonder you're probably spending another
Oh my
$80,000 just
gosh.
on lumber, let alone fixtures and flooring. Like, my goodness, I think I finished my basement at a good time before all
Oh
the prices
yeah.
went up. Just,
It,
it's
that's it, man.
ridiculous.
And we, yeah, for sure. And it was crazy for a while. Thankfully, lumber's come back down a lot, but it's still double what it was 3 or 4 years ago. So it, you know, it, yeah,
It's so
it's hard to
funny.
just.
And
It's
you
so.
see those memes, hey, where it's like you see a guy a truck with a little like quad trailer on the back with like 12 2x4s. It's like millionaire spotted.
Was it hard
Like when
quoting those
the guy in the
projects? What's that?
like
Oh,
the
sorry.
guy in the set up at to eat dinner in the lumber yard, they're like, take me somewhere expensive, you know. It's yeah, it's crazy like
Oh my
that, but
gosh. Was it
it
hard?
seems to be stable. At least here, I don't know about Canada, it seems like it's stabilized here
Was it hard
to some
quoting
extent.
projects in that time? Because I know with we have some family friends back in BC that are owners of lumber companies and different things, and some of their quoting was effective for, I think, 7 days just because pricing was. Did you kind of experience that, and how did you navigate that through the crazy times we've been having lately?
We did, you know, we did, we experienced that, and what you couldn't, it wasn't really foolproof, but what we tried to do was, you know, reach out to our reps at the lumber yard and just say, hey, we've got a project coming up. When you see a dip, let us know and we'll order. And, you
Oh,
know,
cool.
and say, hey, it just dropped to whatever X amount per stud or X amount per sheet of plywood. And we would get it, you know, get it when we thought it was at its lowest, and you just never knew. It's kind of like the stock market, right? You just never know if it's actually at its lowest. We did, what did we do? One time we found somebody had like 250 sheets of plywood for sale on like Facebook Marketplace that we went and grabbed one time for like half of what it was going for. But yeah, for the most part, I mean, you sort of just guess the best you can, because it's like the stock market. You just don't know whether it's going to go up or down. So, yeah.
And I guess you need to price accordingly too, right? Based on,
yeah,
which that probably changes week by week. And that's gotta be stressful as a business owner.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah. It was like, you know, we had some jobs in 2021, you know, where we were like, man, we figured on, you know, 85 grand for rehab on this, but we ran into termites, and now we got an extra $5,000-$8,000, you know, $10,000 in lumber we got to buy. And that, you know, we don't know how it's going to do to what it's going to do to our profit margin. So we had some close calls. You know, thankfully we didn't lose money on any projects, but we definitely made less than we thought we were going to on some of them.
Yeah. So do you have any, for someone who's wanting to get into construction, whatever area of construction that might be, some advice for someone who wants to get started in that field?
Yeah. So, you know, I think, for me, on the job experience has been the best thing. And so, you know, if you want to get started doing it, I mean, of course you can research all kinds of things, follow people on social media who are doing it. You can learn a lot that way. But for us, I mean, you know, I think if you want to do it, the hard part is, if you don't have any experience and you don't have schooling, you're going to start at a pretty low wage. Yeah. And so that's difficult. Well, if they're, you know, if they're midlife or something and they want to start into it, totally doable, but it is a little bit humbling to have to go and start at a lower wage while you're learning. But that's my best recommendation. You'll learn the most working on a job site than you ever would, I think, you know, studying it, YouTubing it. Hands-on is the best way, in my opinion.
Especially in the area that you want, right? We've been talking to a lot of people on the show about, you know, this comes up every episode, the difference between formal education and, you know, hands-on on the job site education. But when you're on the job site, you're also getting, because when you're in like a vocational school, you're learning a whole bunch of stuff that you might not even ever need, but it's to get this little certificate. And I think I think trades in the industry is changing in general, where a lot of these institutions are going to have to adapt, because we were talking to a welder yesterday. That's an upcoming episode, and she was talking about how like vocational schools talk about a big presence in stick welding, but like in the industry, unless you're welding pipe all day. Like you're not going to, like if you're working in a fab shop or a body shop, you're not going to stick weld a panel or, you know, a bumper or whatever. So like there's got to be that shift. Whereas if someone goes to, you know, a shop, you know, getting experience in the shop or on the job site, they can have the opportunity to pick and choose their education of which type of company that they want to work for and learn the type of skills that company has the expertise in. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's it. Being specialized, if you're going into something that's specialized, working under somebody else who has that experience and that knowledge is going to be a lot more useful than sort of getting that general, you know, that general teaching from whether it's a school or whatever. But yeah, 100%. I think you're right. It's being around people who are doing what you want to do, right? That's the key to learning it. And that's how I learned it, at least. So,
especially in the remodeling industry, because you talk about plumbing, electrical, framing, cabinetry, flooring, you know, the list goes on. So if you wanted to go get a formal education, you're going to have to, you know, it's not just going to be a few short terms. There's so many trades that you cover in the projects that you do. You almost have to have, I mean, you can maybe have, say be an electrician, but then there's way more stuff you're going to do. So to go into a formal education training for the projects you're working on, that's a bit tough where that on the job experience. And it depends too. Sometimes you get into a position where people who are going to, you know, being with the cabinet maker, I did a lot of training and went to school, and some students just ran table saws for 4 years. Yeah. And then they come out as a, you know, a journeyperson. Well, it depends who you're working with. I feel like, you know, somebody like yourself and doing all the different projects with your crews, they're going to get a way more well-rounded set of skills doing different things than just doing the same thing. Or, you know, you're wanting to teach them different things instead of just, okay, you're going to just, you're demoing, you're going to demo this house, then you move on to here. You know, you're giving them multiple skills, which are valuable. So speaking of the skill sets that are required to get through on-the-job training, what are some specific skill sets to develop in remodeling or construction?
As far as like what, you know, are useful skills as far as each trade goes?
Yeah, or? Well, just like, I guess, some technical skill sets that you think are important to develop getting into remodeling or construction.
Yeah, so, you know, at least in residential, I can't speak to commercial, but for residential, you know, you're going to start obviously with demolition and planning. And so one thing that I think I always laugh at, you know, in the TV shows, right, the house flipping shows and all those things, to them, demolition, and I think they do it just for TV, they go in with a sledgehammer and they just bust everything up.
Yeah.
Real people don't demo that way, right? Demolition is done by carefully dissecting and removing stuff. And because you just go into the sledgehammer, you're going to end up breaking pipes in the walls. You're going to end up making your life more difficult, right? Ripping wires out and then having to do so. You know, we carefully dissect everything, not to say you can't do it quickly and not to say that a sledgehammer won't be used every now and then, but demolition is not you would make it sound like, oh, any dummy can demo. But if you know how a house is built and you take things apart carefully and neatly so that you don't have this giant pile at the end of the day that's just a huge mess, or busting out, you know, load bearing walls without knowing what you're doing, right? So, you know, of course, everything starts with demolition, and then from there we move on to framing. Framing is a whole skill set on its own, right? I mean, whether you're doing, you know, moving walls or framing in windows or taking out, we do a lot of, you know, opening up floor plans, so taking out load bearing walls and putting up, you know, LVLs and that kind of thing. So framing is a whole skill set on its own, and then from there it's the other individualized trades of plumbing, electricity. You know, learning those just by themselves could take you a long, long time. You can come proficient, you know, you can get on a residential scale, you could get by within a couple years of being, you know, exposed to those. And then, like, you know, just to rattle through, I mean, drywall. I mean, have you ever tried finishing drywall? it takes a while. It takes a practice to finish drywall properly. Because you ever seen a bad drywall job? I mean, it can be rough.
Yeah.
So it's a skill, man. There's guys that do it all day long. They're incredible to watch. And so that's how I've learned a lot of the stuff, you know, is just, we used to sub out a lot more, and then I would watch, you know, I'd be the foreman on the job, but I would watch the drywall guy. I would watch the electrician or the plumber, and I would ask him questions. And so I learned a lot that way, you know, kind of just being exposed to it on the job site, whether or not I was doing it or not. Not that you want to sit there all day not doing anything and watching, but when you get a chance, stop and watch those guys, you know, because you'll learn a lot. Those guys who do it all day long. And if they're nice guys, they'll tell you what they're doing if you ask.
Yeah.
So
any,
I don't know if that's what.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 100%. Awesome. So getting a little more into the minutia of that question, what are some, like, the top three, let's say, and I know that you guys cover a ton of different trades with what you do, but let's kind of stick to maybe construction. What are the top three starting out tools that you would, like, if you were just starting out, or if you had someone, or like if your son was getting into the trade, what are the three things that you'd want him to go to the store and buy to have in his tool belt or in his toolbox?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the number one thing, if you're talking about a tradesman, right, not a business owner, a tradesman, yeah, somebody, yeah, who's getting ready to, the first thing, and it's the most expensive thing, is a truck. It's a really difficult to do this job without having a truck. It can be an old beat up used truck, but you need to be able to carry materials and tools from one place to the next. And I've worked out of cars. Don't get me wrong. I've done it. It's really hard to carry a sheet of plywood on top of a Honda Civic. So getting a vehicle that supports it, whether it's a truck or like a van or like an old SUV, something you can haul material and tools with, that's a key. And then, you know, what I tell my guys when they're brand new, as I tell them to get a drill kit, so an impact and a drill, those are going to be things that get used just about every day. and a tool belt, you know, or a tool bag, something depending on the trade. If you're a framer or an electrician or something, you're going to want a tool belt. And if you're, you know, other trades, or if you're generalized construction, you might get away with the tool bag with your standard stuff in it, you know, a hammer, you know, pair alignment, or, you know, channel locks, just the basics, chalk reel, speed square. I don't know if you're looking for like one exact tool, but
no, this,
I
always tell my guys, like, yeah,
it's the drill kit, the tool bag, and the truck. I mean, you can do a lot of work with just those things, you know?
Oh yeah.
Nobody has mentioned a vehicle.
Yeah, ever.
And I think that is,
it's not, we've been doing this for 6 months, but
extremely important, you know, like you said, and trying to get, I mean, you might have to start out in a car with a little SUV and a trailer, but that is a big means of getting work and materials to work and tools. And, you know, that kind of builds up your company image as well with the vehicles and different things. And it was a very intelligent answer. I like that.
Yeah, that's good.
And a trailer, like you said, a trailer is not a bad idea. You know, if you can't afford to buy a truck, you can almost get a used trailer on Craigslist or something, or, well, on Craigslist, whatever. Nobody uses that anymore, do they?
I think so.
I'm sure you can get a Facebook Marketplace trailer for $1,000 or something, and that would be enough for you to haul your material around for a while if that's what you want to do. But yeah, getting transportation and be able to haul in your equipment and tools, that's a big thing, yeah, for sure.
Well, Josh, I just want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your obviously busy schedule to spend an hour with us and our listeners, and hopefully people have been inspired to get out and get off the couch and build something cool and try something new. And so as we wrap this episode up, can you just kind of share where people can find you, and if there's anything else that you'd like to promote that you have going on, now's the time.
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty active on social, especially Instagram. It's Josh of All Trades. I'm sure you put that in the show notes or something, but yeah,
for sure.
Facebook, Josh Nicodemus on Facebook. You can always, you know, email me or call me. If you want to put my info in the show notes, you're welcome to do that. I'll make sure you have it. Don't have anything going on as far as, you know, nothing to promote. You know, we're just doing what we're doing, and you know,
you're not being headhunted by TLC for a house flipper show anytime soon, or?
Oh man, that's a whole nother story. We were.
Oh really?
Yeah, we were by A&E, and long story short, after a couple interviews, we decided it wasn't for us. They don't really, I won't go into the long story, but they don't really want to see the truth about, you know, our business. They want it to look a certain way for TV, and we said, look, you can follow us around watching what we do, but I'm not going to pretend that we're some kind of way we're not, you know, we're going to tell the truth. And so we weren't what they were looking for. They wanted us to, you know, work with a designer and all kinds of things. It just wasn't true. So,
yeah.
Yeah. No TV shows at the moment.
Well, good for you for sticking to, you know, staying true to your convictions in that way. That's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right on. Josh, thanks again for your time. We really appreciate it. And yeah, we'll put all the links in the show notes. And thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks, Hoff.
Thanks, Rosie.
And we'll catch everyone in the next one.